All right, live from Warner Park, we're inside of the team store. Storm Chasers first pitch coming up at noon. We're here until 2. Still have tickets to give away, a four-pack if you'd like to take in some afternoon baseball on day 2 of the minor league season. Let's welcome in former Husker Super Bowl champion Scott Chandler, who joins us now. Scott, good Wednesday morning. How's Aaron Rodgers doing today?
I don't know. It seems like we'll have to check in about every hour to see who they didn't re-sign or what's going on. But the drama is seems like it's unfolding more and more by the day up there in Green Bay.
How did we in a week, essentially, we have, I mean, this has just blown up that I don't know if, you know, Green Bay can walk back from this, if they can appease Aaron Rodgers. What, as somebody that is in the game, what's your read on why he is upset, and are both sides at some point at fault for this relationship being as public as it's become this week?
Yeah, well, I think naturally I usually try to side with the player and try to see their perspective. And when you look at Aaron Rodgers and what he means to the NFL and what he's done, and his, nobody can deny his talent, I think there's been a rift from the moment they hired, not so much Matt LaFleur, but it seems like the front office, the general manager, has not seen eye to eye with Aaron. When you go all the way back to last year when he reached out to Aaron and the reports where he told him, you don't be the problem. There's an obvious rift between the general manager and Aaron Rodgers, and it's a power struggle. And the one thing about it is you need to get it under control inside the building, and the general manager needs to understand, listen, you may put together the roster, you may shop for the groceries, but we have the best-tasting entree in the NFL. Do not mess this thing up. And I think it's up to the general manager to walk back, make amends with Aaron Rodgers. And I don't know if this thing is starting to boil over because of the contract dispute, because he wants paid more, or if he really wants out of town for some other reasons. And there's no disputing. The biggest rift, the biggest wedge that was put between these two is when they drafted a quarterback in the first round last year.
Why wouldn't they? See, you and I have talked about this of do you let a quarterback suggest things? I think you let him suggest, but, you know, coaches coach, players play, front office, they make those decisions. Now, if you have somebody like Aaron Rodgers or a Patrick Mahomes or a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, you take what they are feeling or what they're thinking and you take that into consideration. But why? Because I look at what Tampa did this weekend when they were going to draft the quarterback. He's not somebody that's coming in and beating out Tom Brady, but they made the courtesy call to say, hey, I know you're probably not paying attention to the draft. You're doing something. You're at the Derby. We're going to draft a quarterback here. Why do you think Green Bay didn't just give that courtesy to Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to the power struggle and that the front office was trying to lay down and put down that definitive line that they didn't feel like they had to. You are the employee. You're the player. You play for us. You will be here as long as we want you here. And I truly believe that power struggle has existed between Aaron Rodgers and the new front office for a couple years now. And it constantly goes back and forth, and it was just another way to show Aaron Rodgers, listen, you have no say in who we're drafting. We're going to draft whoever we want. And that is true. I mean, any team can draft whoever they want, but you have to take in consideration everything he's done for your franchise, everything he can still do for your franchise, and just let him know that, hey, at one time he was that guy they brought in to eventually replace Brett Favre. If you continue to play at the top of your game, you're not going anywhere.
Do you think they trade him?
I would be shocked. I really would be shocked. I think, you know, when you look at these quarterbacks who we've had trade rumors going back to Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, everybody thinks that everybody's going to be traded. I think it would take a very large haul to get Aaron Rodgers out of a Green Bay Packers uniform into another uniform. I think there's teams that would give up a ton to get Aaron Rodgers because I think he's got good football left in him to help somebody win a Super Bowl. Heck, you know, I go to my player chat with former teammates, and we were hoping the big news would bust that Aaron Rodgers had been traded to the Saints. That's all we talked about throughout the draft. Stop drafting these young guys. Go get Aaron Rodgers. But, no, I think it's going to take a rift that is no longer repairable. Aaron Rodgers threatens to retire or go host Jeopardy or something like that for them to ship him out of town.
See, that is so crazy. I said that yesterday, Scott, that we're to the point where a guy that is the reigning MVP, he's got one Super Bowl, he you know, kind of sometimes acts like he's got this dynasty of run of Super Bowls, but he is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, that we're actually having a conversation that he could step away from the game that he loves and go be a host of a game show. And that just blows me away that we could be at that point. But, you know, I think it's both sides that's really, you know, just gotten sideways, that this has become very uncomfortable. And now you're pitting your own fan base against each other and trying to figure out what the future is going to look like. And probably at the end of the day, there is no shot that Jordan Love is embraced in Green Bay, right? Whether he remains the backup to Aaron Rodgers or eventually he's the starter.
Yeah, I mean, poor Jordan Love. All he's guilty of is getting drafted really high. I mean, he's sitting there like, what did I do? Everybody looks at him, but this goes back to just like when they drafted Aaron Rodgers and he waited behind Brett Favre. And if you remember, Brett Favre was forcing his way out of town. He wanted to get traded. He got traded to the Jets. And could history repeat itself? Who knows? But, you know, certainly it could happen. It could force Green Bay maybe to move on to their plan a few years earlier than they thought. They could think 3 or 4 years ago that they were going to have Aaron Rodgers. They would let Jordan Love develop behind him. It may speed up their timeline, especially if somebody comes along and gives up 3 first-round picks or some really big haul that you'd actually have to consider.
I thought about you yesterday when the news broke, and it's really unfortunate. The offensive tackle for Denver, Juwan James, suffered a season-ending torn Achilles, and he was working out away from the facility. So his $10 million salary for the upcoming season definitely appears to be in jeopardy. And I listened to talking heads, former players, but more current players that are being asked about this in the last 2 days. And you and I have talked about voluntary workouts and boycotting it. It's crazy the amount of NFL players that don't understand the CBA in rules, regarding rules of injuries away from the facility, that, you know, Denver could take his money because of his boycott, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, this is where I've had a long time problem with our union, is I feel like our union keeps players uninformed. I don't want to say intentionally, but I kind of want to say intentionally, because if a lot of players knew that this was a possibility, there would not be this many teams that had joined the boycott club of voluntary workouts. I just believe that there would be a lot of players that would say, listen, I have to stay in shape. If I have to stay in shape and I get hurt, I'm not going to get paid. Well, I may as well just go to the facility and do it. The NFLPA, the Players Association, it is up to them to inform all the players that that's a possibility. So if they can make an informed decision, it would be an absolute travesty if guys are doing all they can to get ready for an NFL season, get hurt, and then don't get their salary because they're trying to do right. But again, it goes back to the union needs to make sure all these guys are informed so they can make an informed decision and say, no, I'm working out the facility. I don't care if you guys decide to skip town.
The compensation that San Francisco gave up to get the number 3 pick and then to go with Trey Lance, what were your thoughts when it was Trey Lance that they selected?
No, I wasn't surprised. I think I would have been more surprised if they had taken Mac Jones that high. As the draft got closer and I saw Mac Jones, his pro day workout, and I was watching replays of his games, I thought if he went number 3, that would be really high. And I actually thought when the pick came up and said pick is in, I said Trey Lance or Justin Fields. I just felt like those two guys, because of their athletic ability, their mobility, really fit into what Kyle Shanahan likes to do offensively. And I mean, the jury's out on Trey Lance. He's only thrown 300-some college passes. He's got all sorts of upside when you look at it, and that's what the NFL draft really is trying to capture a guy's ceiling, and that's why he went that high. But I just felt like for what they do in that offense, it didn't surprise me that he was picked, and I actually thought it could be Justin Fields as well there.
Your thoughts on the Saints draft? We've got a couple of Saints fans that are either on the air with us or big listeners, and they were not super excited. They were almost their free agency was better than their draft. Your thoughts on what the Saints did?
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, when I looked at the draft, and I think Saints fans' hopes probably were even more elevated when there was a splash report earlier that day that they were trying to trade inside the top 10 to pick one of the top corners. Certainly, any Saints fan knows that when the Saints secondary has been good, they've had a chance to be really good. And they're missing the corner opposite Marshon Lattimore. They reached, I think, for the defensive end, probably because Cam Jordan's getting older. Marcus Davenport is in a prove-it year. And then they probably reached for the linebacker from Ohio State as well. I felt like his pro day numbers really did not represent the lack of productivity he had at Ohio State when you look at his numbers. So I think those top two picks, most Saints fans felt like were reaches.
Is there, you know, everybody gives out draft grades, and I think we got to wait a little bit. It's just kind of like the recruiting grades as well. People do that for a living. People want that. They consume it. So you put it out shortly after a recruiting season or a NFL draft season. But is there anybody that, I mean, there's nobody that sits around and goes, man, we really struggled in this draft, right? Doesn't at this point, even on a Wednesday after the draft ended on a Saturday, teams are still sitting around going, man, we did good. We won this draft, guys.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some teams that maybe felt like they would have had, maybe, when you talk about the first round or maybe the second round, there's teams that felt like they would have had a guy available to them that was taken earlier. So maybe that disappoints them. But I think the NFL draft, you're right, it's almost like every team after a great minicamp or OTA feel like they're ready to win the Super Bowl that year. And there's so much football to be played. There's so much development of these guys that has to take place. And really the difference in the draft is teams who draft, who have the luxury of drafting best available because their team is really good versus teams that have to fill needs and don't quite get the best players available because they're filling depth at certain spots.
I've thought that the NFL draft really, if you're looking at it from the college perspective, it tells you a lot about your program, where you are. If you're Alabama, you're Ohio State, you're Clemson, you're Georgia, you know that you've recruited NFL caliber players, you've developed them or they've stayed at that level, and so the NFL is coming for you. Plus you win, which also attracts NFL teams. So that gives you the answer. I got a really good football program. But I want to give you two cases. One will be in Nebraska, but first let's talk about Michigan. Michigan has had 18 draft picks in the last few years, but they haven't had the wins or the division championships or the Big Ten championship. If you're looking at Michigan and you see an abundance of players that are drafted from Jim Harbaugh, but it's not equating to on-field, what do you say is wrong with that picture?
Well, I immediately point to coaching. I point to the X's and O's. I point to the development of football IQ, because these guys obviously have the talent, the ability to be tall, to be strong, to be able to jump far and to run fast. When you get those type of players, that's more than half the battle in college football. And there's something wrong when those type of guys that you're recruiting who can play professional football are not equating to wins on Saturdays. That tells me something is wrong with your teaching of the game, or maybe it's your scheme as well.
And it may, you know, I mean, Harbaugh's scheme in Stanford was to maul people, comes to a conference where that's a similar identity. I wonder, it's always, and it's kind of the same thing with Scott Frost here, Scott, is you were a cutting edge, you had ideas that were ahead of the game, and then people caught up where they adjusted. Can you reinvent yourself? I look at Harbaugh, Chip Kelly, and even Scott, who is much younger in his coaching career. Can you reinvent yourself or find that next cutting-edge thing? I think that's what Michigan is up against. But now let's talk about Nebraska. They have two offensive linemen go. Hymus goes to the Chargers in the fifth round. Matt Farniok goes to the Cowboys in the seventh round. Hymus getting drafted, it was the earliest the Nebraska player has been taken since 16 when they had the run of Valentine Collins and Alex Lewis. But two guys this year, two guys last year, not a first-round pick for a decade now. When you look at what the NFL draft says about Nebraska, you say what?
That there's a lack of ability across the board. And I don't want to make it sound like the guys we have don't play hard. I believe we have a ton of guys who play hard. I believe we have a strength staff that is trying to develop these guys, and they're getting bigger, faster, and stronger. But there's a certain limit where – you know, you go back, you know, I think Lawrence Phillips was the last first-round offensive player that Nebraska had. That was 1996. That is an eternity. That is a long time. And that tells you that you're not getting enough difference makers on the offensive side of the ball, especially when you're talking about scheme. The difference now is it would almost behoove Nebraska to go back to the old scheme and recruit players that are being overlooked, to recruit the 6'2", 6'3", linemen that nobody wants because everybody thinks they need 6'7", tackles. But everybody that runs spread now, they're all recruiting the same players. So you almost have to find a way to divert from that, to find players that other teams are overlooking. But there's definitely a lack of pro-caliber talent. And you said earlier, when you win games, it becomes easier to recruit guys like that. Because when you win games, guys get drafted. And that's the ultimate goal of many of these players. Go get college education, yes. Get free school, yes. But a lot of those guys have dreams of playing in the NFL, which is why they go to Alabama and Georgia and LSU, because they know even if they start for 1 year, they're going to get drafted, and that's their ultimate goal.
Fair or not, if I'm a recruiting a kid in high school, would you even let yourself go there? And you work with young people to go, that guy has the feel of a potential NFL guy. Is that way too soon?
I think it's really hard to do that with high school kids, but you have to do it. I think when you're recruiting kids and they say, can you get me to the NFL? You have to have a track record of showing you can get kids to the NFL by the way you develop them, the way you're going to develop them in the weight room with their bodies, because that obviously is the biggest thing that changes from high school to those 4 years in college, is those guys developing into men and growing into their bodies and being able to carry that extra weight. So, yes, I think there are certain guys you have to be honest with, but every player that gets a scholarship to D1 football, they believe that they can play in the NFL, and that's what they want to do. And it's up to you to give them that path of what they have to improve on and how you think you can get them there.
What happens in this country with football, high school football, into college, but more on the development of football and people playing football? What do you do if you're in the Midwest when Florida, Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, and California account for nearly half the players that were just drafted? We may have a little bit of population shift in the future, but it's rich in the South where you got to go to get players. But if you're in the Midwest and you're Nebraska and you've gone into those states, how do you make yourself appealing to win the battle to get those guys that are NFL caliber? Is it strictly just winning, or is it getting an NFL guy to show to a guy that wants to be in the NFL?
Yeah, it's winning, but hopefully you can get a few difference makers. Obviously, those difference makers are going to help you win, and it'll help everything kind of snowball, and you'll start getting more of those guys because those wins will happen. But you need it. That's why you have to hit early on as a coach. You have to hit on a recruiting class or two that you can really develop those type of players, and it draws attention. And I've said forever, I felt like going to the Big Ten really reduced our exposure to Texas kids. It was hard to make that sale to go up to Nebraska when you don't get to come back and play at Baylor and Texas Tech and Oklahoma and all those different places in the South. And I hear from coaches here all the time, it's hard to get kids to go up there because mom and dad don't want to go to Rutgers or Penn State to watch kids. So it changed the recruiting footprint. But I also think when you look at Nebraska, you have to kind of go at it from a different angle. You have to go get those meat and potato kids, those corn-fed kids, and then you go to California and Florida and Texas, and you have to hit on those five or six guys, those skill position type players who are going to make a big difference in your program.
I agree. That blueprint has, when it's been executed, it has worked out well for Nebraska. Scott, as always, I appreciate your insight. Have a great week. Thanks for your time, as always.
All right, take care.
That's Scott Shanley, former Husker Super Bowl champion. Keep an eye on the population shift in this country. If those states continue to be the ones that produce the most football talent, because those states, if you are not in a state that produces a lot of football talent, and we're talking high-level talent, this state produces talent, but we're talking NFL draft, the top 256 players or so every single season. If you're not in that location, how do you win there? Is it wins? Yes. Is it getting somebody from there, developing him there, from there, and then having a blueprint? Or is it a connection in that area? Somebody who knows that area so well that they can lock it down and they can convince just one. Because what it takes is just one. We're going to talk about the offensive line a little bit later. And not necessarily about, is this offensive line better than it was last year? But what is the future of the offensive line at Nebraska? The identity. And two guys get drafted this year. I mean, if Hymus didn't get drafted, what are we doing? The guy started 40 games at Nebraska. Did he get all the accolades that he wanted? No. And I think he's awful. I think he's bitter about that. He had a weird last year at Nebraska. Not sure what went wrong. Didn't seem to be entirely happy. But he should be happy now. He's going to the NFL. He's a fifth-round pick. He's got a chance to play for the Chargers and to block for Justin Herbert. But if Hymus wouldn't have got drafted, then he would have said, man, what are we doing here? But think about it from the standpoint of the offensive line when it comes to the NFL. And we've picked apart the offensive line on what's wrong, who's coaching it, what's the identity, why don't we run the damn ball, what are you doing to help that offensive line, what kind of offensive lineman are you recruiting? It only takes one. It only takes one. And that one, if you're following the lines of what's supposed to happen when you recruit a player, a high-level top caliber player out of high school, you get him into your program, you're supposed to process him along their 3 or 4 years and get him to the NFL. That guy is Turner Corcoran. Turner Corcoran is one of the highest recruited players that Nebraska has ever had. Turner Corcoran needs to, your return on investment is not only on the field while he's wearing your gear, but to get him as a high pick in the draft. Fedoni is the same way. One of the top recruits you've ever gotten. Process him. Turn him into a high-level pick in the draft, because it just takes one, and it's a domino effect. So you could say, hey, look at this guy. We recruited him, we developed him, and now look at all the money he's making. Where have we heard that before? That happens at Alabama on a daily basis. It just takes one. And it takes not only the NFL, but it takes one to get the accolades. It is, of all of the stats that are on the wrong side of the ledger for Nebraska, the fact that Nebraska has not had an All-American offensive lineman since 2001 is amazing. But then you go, well, that absolutely makes sense, especially in the last 5 to 7 years, because the offensive line hasn't been the identity of this football program. It has not been, when you think of Nebraska football, what do you think of? Or what is the program doing, winning, successful, consistent? Oh, it's the offensive line that is doing the same exact thing. I asked earlier, we'll get into this after the mailbag, and this could be a year because they want it, is offensive line is the identity of this football program. You would love for that to be at a place like Nebraska, but let's be honest, it hasn't. Those guys that are playing on the offensive line, they would like it to be that way. I don't know if there's enough trust there that they will say, yep, we're rolling with this offensive line. But if you look at the last 3 years, 12-20, the close losses, the head-scratching moments that happened during a game on Saturday, some good football, some bad football, some inconsistent football, what position group right now, mirrors what this program is, that actually is the identity of the program with all those things that I mentioned? The good, the bad, the inconsistent, the roller coaster, what position group represents that? I know which one does. We'll talk about it after the mailbag, which is coming up next, brought to you by Oscar's Pizza and Wings. We're live from Werner Park. We'll keep you updated on the score between the Chasers and the St. Paul Saints. Jake Eisenberg, who is the brand new play-by-play guy for the Storm Chasers, stopped in earlier. You can hear all the Storm Chaser games at 1180 on 1180. You can tune over there after 2, please. But he's got all the play-by-play action. But we'll keep you updated on what's going on out here in Werner Park. You still got time to stop by. We got now tickets for Thirsty Thursday tomorrow. Come into the Sarpy County Tourism Office. By the way, they want to take care of you. They got a lot of stuff going on in Sarpy County. Say hello to Fred and Alex, and then come and join us here in the team store. It's a field trip day. Boy, it's great to see all these people out here at the ballpark. It's got the sights, the smells. It's got some energy. Should be a good day, and there's still room for you. It's 2 more hours to go. Mailbag's next. This is Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.